This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. U.S. President Trump is readying for his second summit with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. Heading to Hanoi, this time in Vietnam, the hope for the president is that there could be a deal that would lead to the North Korean leader to give up his nuclear weapons. National Security Advisor John Bolton 2 months ago said a second summit was needed because North Korea had yet to live up to the commitments it made last June in Singapore. A lack of major breakthrough for the second time could have a negative political ramification for Mr. Trump. As he awaits prison, President Donald Trump's convicted former lawyer and fixer Michael Cohen will be all over Capitol Hill this week. Beginning Tuesday, Cohen starts a 3-day grilling from lawmakers on what he knows about Mr. Trump's maneuvers before and after he won the White House. Much of that testimony will be private, but the main event will come on Wednesday when Cohen will appear for the first time at an open public hearing before the powerful House Oversight Committee. Cohen pleaded guilty in November to lying to Congress, among other offenses, and was ordered to serve 3 years starting in May. Cohen on Tuesday will go behind closed doors with the Senate Intelligence Committee. Then on Thursday, he will cap his Hill visit with a closed House Intelligence Committee hearing. Both the United States and Taliban are indicating that their current round of negotiations in Doha that started Monday may prove more crucial than any other meeting till now. The U.S. Special Representative for Afghanistan Reconciliation, Zalmay Khalilzad, called the Taliban's new negotiating team more authoritative, adding that this could indicate a significant movement. Khalilzad also met for the first time with one of the founding members of the Taliban, who he helped get released from Pakistani custody last October to facilitate the peace talks. This is VOA News. As he announced new financial assistance for the Venezuelan people, U.S. Vice President Mike Pence said that the Trump administration stands with the U.S.-recognized interim president of Venezuela, Juan Guaido, 100%. Vice President Pence said, as he announced new financial assistance for the Venezuelan people, Pence also announced additional sanctions on the regime of President Nicolas Maduro. And officials include the three border state governors implicated in violence over the weekend and a member of Maduro's inner circle. On Saturday, Maduro supporters fired bullets at those attempting to get aid trucks into Venezuela, while Venezuelan border troops fired tear gas and rubber bullets at civilians. The top Iranian negotiator for the 2015 nuclear deal with six world powers has suddenly resigned. Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif gave no reason for quitting. He wrote a message saying that I'm apologizing to you for all the shortcomings in the past years during my time as foreign minister. He wrote in an Instagram message Monday, I thank the Iranian nation and officials. Both leaders from the U.S. and China are said to be optimistic that a deal can be reached to avoid an escalation of trade tensions. On Monday, President Trump said he planned to hold a summit with Chinese President Xi Jinping to finalize the details. Senior U.S. and Chinese officials have been holding a series of talks in Beijing and Washington since Mr. Trump and Xi declared a 90-day truce in their war in December, so a deal could be worked out. The U.S. has long accused China of numerous unfair trade practices. They include the alleged theft of intellectual property and demands U.S. firms turn over trade secrets if they want to do business in China. The Chinese have denied the accusations and say it is the U.S. that is guilty of trade violations meant to stifle China's economic development. Incumbent Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari appears to be in the lead over his main challenger, Atiku Abubakar, as the vote counting continues in the national elections. Nigeria's Independent National Electoral Commission said Monday that Buhari had won the vote in at least six states, with the main challenger winning in the federal capital territory. Syrian President Bashar al-Assad made his first public visit to his closest regional ally, Iran, since the start of the Syrian conflict 8 years ago. Meeting Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei in Tehran Monday, it showed footage of Assad meeting Khamenei and said that two leaders agreed to continue cooperation at all levels for the interests of the two friendly nations. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Tuesday, February 26th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Partial results from Nigeria's presidential election are being released, but the opposition PDP is contesting results from one state.
We believe that the results that they announced did not tally with what our agents returned to us, and there were cases of mishandling of our party leaders in the state. There are cases of tampering with the results.
Kola Olubodeya is the National Publicity Secretary of the opposition PDP. VOA's Peter Clotte will join us from Lagos with more on the Nigerian election. A Liberian lawyer and former presidential candidate will comment on the impeachment trial of an associate justice of the Supreme Court. And the U.S. expresses deep concern over Sudan's state of emergency.
We call for an inclusive political process toward elections wherein all Sudanese are able to exercise their rights to freedom of expression, freedom of association, and freedom of peaceful assembly.
Jonathan Cohen is the U.S. acting ambassador to the United Nations. We'll tell you why some want South Sudan's first vice president removed. And the U.N. Secretary General warns of erosion of human rights globally. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Partial results from Nigeria's presidential election are being released, but the opposition People's Democratic Party, the PDP, is contesting results from Nasarawa State. Kola Olubodeya is the National Publicity Secretary of the PDP.
The objection is for Nasarawa State for now, because we believe that the results that they announced did not tally with what our agents returned to us. And there were cases of mishandling of our party leaders in the state. There are cases of tampering with the results in the state, and then they vehemently reject the results for Nasarawa.
But so far, are you pleased with the other states that have been announced?
After our meeting tomorrow, we will take a position on the other states. There are some sham being announced as a result in the election. For instance, in Yobe State, it's strange how our party can have 50,000 votes at an APC over 400,000 votes. The whole thing is strange. It's strange our electoral process. However, by tomorrow morning, we'll make and take a formal position on the state-by-state analysis.
From the PDP perspective, how do you interpret some of the information that came out during election on Saturday? Do you think that might have an impact on what the results might look like?
Yes, we in the New Democratic Party protested some of the things we are hearing concerning the officials of government. However, it did not stop them from going ahead and doing such manipulations. However, like I said earlier, when we meet tomorrow, we'll take a formal position on a state-by-state basis.
But for now, you are not pleased with the results from Nasarawa State?
Nasarawa State. Yes, we are always concerned about the result that came out of Nasarawa State. But after that, more results have since come in. In the morning, we will do a state-by-state analysis and we'll make our position known.
We do appreciate very much. Thank you, sir. It's so nice to talk with you.
You're welcome. Thank you very much.
Kola Olubodeya is the National Publicity Secretary of the Opposition People's Democratic Party of Nigeria. You're speaking with me from the capital, Abuja. Joining us now from Lagos is VOA's Peter Clotte, who is covering the Nigerian election. Good morning to you, Peter.
Good morning, James.
Well, thank you very much for joining us. What is the latest in terms of the preliminary results that are being released, and which candidate is ahead in the count?
Well, James, this morning, local time at 10 a.m., the collation of the results will continue at the Independent National Electoral Commission headquarters in Abuja. This after the chairman of the collation, Professor Yakub Mahmood, adjourned the collation of the results for presidential election at the National Collation Center. Now, for the results, the state so far already declared and collated are Ekiti, Osun, Kwara, Gombe, Kogi, Nasarawa, Ondo, Yobe, Abia, Enugu, and Ebonyi. 11 so far. With the 11 declared, President Muhammadu Buhari is leading with 7 states, followed by main opposition leader and former Vice President Atiku Abubakar with 4 states so far.
There are some suggestions that the delay of the vote from February 16th to the 23rd might have had some impact on the turnout. What are the people saying there?
The people are saying this is definitely true because people I spoke in the streets said that some of them couldn't go back to their hometowns where they initially registered to vote, and that mere hours to the opening of official polls when the Independent National Electoral Commission postponed the election took them unawares, and that some of them didn't have the money to return to vote, and that might have affected turnout. In other cases, there were heavy downpours, particularly here in Lagos, which they said could have affected it as well as the violence that occurred in some parts of Lagos. But all in all, it appears that the postponement of the election from February 16th to the 23rd might have had a very bad impact on the outcome of turnout in Nigeria's election.
You heard me, Peter, speaking to a spokesperson for the opposition PDP about the preliminary results that are coming in, particularly from Nasarawa State. What else is the opposition saying about the preliminary results?
So far, the main opposition, People's Democratic Party, have rejected the results that have been announced or collated by the Independent National Electoral Commission, saying that it was glaring massaging of figures and that they don't have confidence, and that the results they received from their internal collated results from the polling stations show different numbers from what is being announced by INEC, and that's why they totally rejected it out of hand. They sent a press release, of which I have a copy here now, that they don't have confidence in the Independent National Electoral Commission figures so far, and that they seem to have tampered with it just to ensure that President Muhammadu Buhari is re-elected. But APC officials I spoke with are saying that the accusations are misguided, without merit, and they demanded that the main opposition party present its proof of the accusations it has been making.
Back to the delay and the impact of the delay from February 16th to 23rd on the turnout, what is the Elections Commission saying? Are they saying that they might, and also because of the violence, is the Election Commission saying they might have to have rerun in some states or in some areas?
There were places that did not vote due to logistical challenges, and for that, the Electoral Commission made an announcement and made provisions for elections to continue on Sunday, which occurred. However, the Electoral Commission has yet to make a firm decision or announce its decision with regards to places where there were violence, places where property of INEC, including ballot papers, which were destroyed or in some cases burned and ballot boxes broken. They're yet to make a firm decision on what action they would take. But with the collation of results, it's unlikely that they will make any decision, because some analysts are saying that these areas are so small or infinitesimal to affect the outcome of the total election, with approximately over 70 million people registered officially to vote. If there are a few thousands who are unable to vote, it might not necessarily affect the outcome of the election. That has yet to be made official by the Independent National Electoral Commission. So we are expecting to hear from them about some of these concerns raised by political parties here in Nigeria.
Peter, thank you very much for joining us this morning.
You're welcome, James. Have a good day.
Thank you very much. That was VOA's Peter Clotet covering the Nigerian election in Lagos, Nigeria. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Barton in Washington. Today is Tuesday, February 26th. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 15 minutes past the hour. Former presidential candidate Charles Bramskin of Liberia says the impeachment proceeding of Associate Justice Kabina Janneh is unconstitutional. Justice Janet is facing trial by the Liberian Senate following a bill of impeachment from the House of Representatives in October 2018, accusing him of acts inimical to his duties as Associate Justice of the Supreme Court and abuse of power. Brahms Kane, a lawyer and a former presidential candidate, says if the current impeachment of Justice Janet goes ahead, it will be a threat to Liberia's justice system.
Take the constant case. The opinion in that case was not signed by Janet. It was signed by Kokpo, the same Chief Justice who is now presiding over the impeachment.
They say he manipulated his colleagues.
If he manipulated Chief Justice and everybody else who was manipulated, it's complete unconstitutional what is going on.
What makes it unconstitutional, Counselor?
The Constitution, Article 43, that gives the legislature the power to impeach and to try, tells you that you cannot have a trial until the House of Representatives and the Senate have gotten together and passed the rules that would enable them to conduct an impeachment trial.
It's good that you come from the two sides, from the legal perspective and also as a legislator, evidence of being a former pro tem. Have you been doing some consultations on whether there are rules already set up?
I know there's no rules. They admit there's no rules.
You sure about that?
I'm certain, because the Senate just tried to pass rules after the bill of impeachment got to them. But even if they were to pass a rule, it would be unconstitutional.
Why the senators agree to be jurors now, you think?
That is the law. They are jurors. By virtue of this trial, the law required them to become jurors. The point of the matter is that they can't even have the trial. They shouldn't have it until the lower house has passed a rule and they have agreed, concur with them, and have a single rule.
You think there's some foul play? There's some influence coming from other branches of government to impeach Justice Janet?
You see, the thing is, I don't get into the business of speculating. I talk the law and I talk the facts. The facts as they appear just all of this world. The crazy constant case. Janet didn't sign the opinion. The Austin Clark case, it was an opinion written in Article 73 of the Constitution, I believe it is, says that you cannot punish any justice for what he did on the bench. You talk about theft of property. You know what I mean by brother said theft of property? Because when they filed the first bill of impeachment, Justice Janet went to the Supreme Court. His lawyers went to the House and got copies of the proceedings of the House, put it in their petition that they sent to the Supreme Court. And since the Supreme Court looked at this thing, it's not correct, they amended their petition and said, oh, they messed up our record. How can I steal public record that pertains to me? The funny thing about this case, when Justice Janet went to the Supreme Court for writ of prohibition, the House of Representatives told the Supreme Court, in essence, go to hell. We're not coming. They never appeared. But the Supreme Court did not find it necessary to hold the House and the Speaker in contempt for obstructing the work of the Supreme Court.
You think the justice system is under attack with these kind of developments?
Should we continue along the line we're on, there will be no rule of law in this country. What we talk about now has nothing to do with Kabina and Janet. What we are talking about is the rule of law in this country. Can you imagine if you can impeach somebody from the judiciary simply because you don't like what he said or you disagree, you want to supplant your legal reasoning with his? If that happens in this country, there's no rule of law.
Charles Bramskin is the leader of the opposition Liberty Party of Liberia. He spoke with reporter Moses Gaziewu in Monrovia. The United States has expressed its deep concern about Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir's declaration of a one-year nationwide state of emergency. From the United Nations, viewers Margaret Bashir reports that Bashir's decision made Friday follows 2 months of protests that have rocked Sudan with calls for the president to step down.
Speaking at a regular UN Security Council briefing Monday on the situation in Sudan's Darfur region, U.S. Acting Ambassador Jonathan Cohen told council members that Washington is evaluating the impact of President Bashir's announcement.
We're deeply concerned about the declaration of a national state of emergency and call on the government of Sudan to respect the rights of all individuals in Sudan, bring an immediate end to the violent repression of peaceful protests, and seek accountability for those responsible for violations and abuses.
In addition to the state of emergency, Bashir dissolved local and national governments as protests grew over a declining economy and rising commodity prices. Ambassador Cohen urged the government to allow demonstrators and opponents of Bashir to express dissent.
We call for an inclusive political process toward elections wherein all Sudanese are able to exercise their rights to freedom of expression, freedom of association, and freedom of peaceful assembly. The immediate release of all journalists, political opposition leaders, human rights activists, and other protesters who've been arbitrarily detained.
Activists say at least 56 people have died during the demonstrations, a figure the government disputes. Bashir has ruled Sudan since 1989 and is wanted by the International Criminal Court for alleged war crimes, crimes against humanity, and genocide in Darfur. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
Some politicians formerly allied to South Sudan's first vice president, Taban Deng Gai, are calling for his removal from the government before the end of the pre-transitional period. Dozens of lawmakers and other officials accused the first vice president of mismanaging state funds in implementing the August 2015 agreement. Ornette Walter Solomon reports from Juba.
75 members of the SPLM-IO Interim Governing Council in the Transitional Government of National Unity signed a petition calling for Taban Deng Gai's dismissal as first vice president. Otim David Okot, the Secretary General of the SPLM-IO Interim Governing Council in the Transitional Government, read the petition.
Since the nomination and installation as SVP in July 27, 2016, the SPLM-IO in Tigono has witnessed a relentless abuse of power and public office, unreasonable and irrational decision-making, fiscal mismanagement and greed, squandering of financial resources of the state in the name of implementation of RCS 2015, and debilitating decline in party's members' trust and confidence in General Taban as SVP and leader.
Okot says the first vice president's actions also caused divisions among the forces loyal to the group and led to an increase in human rights abuses across the country. The group accuses Gai of prematurely and unilaterally dissolving the entire structures of the SPLM-IO faction he led without consulting with party's leaders.
The misguided actions of the FVP to dissolve the SPLM-IO without following procedure and without consulting party leaders was not just a mere travesty of justice to party members, but a recipe for political chaos as it plunged the party and its military wing into deep crisis, thereby encouraging the IO forces to either join other opposition forces or to hold out without command and control, leading to criminality and human rights violation.
Okot says Gai failed to deliver on the promises the SPLM-IO Gai faction made when the group appointed him to replace Riek Machar as first vice president when the former rebel leader fled Juba in July 2016. Okot says his group wants Lieutenant General Gatkuoth Othnyang to replace Gai. But Agil Machara, the first vice president's press secretary, says the people calling for Gai's removal do not understand what they are talking about.
Their claims are too wild and preposterous, and they are out of touch with realities, whether it is with the agreement on the resolution of the conflict in the Republic of South Sudan or with the revitalized agreement on the conflict of the Republic of South Sudan. The removal of the first vice president is not the work of anybody. He was brought by the top leadership of the SPLM-IO to replace Riek Machar after the incidents of the 2016 July in J1.
Machar says the agreement is clear that Gai must finish his term until the revised peace deal is in place. Okot says his group welcomes efforts by President Salva Kiir to try to reunify the various SPLM factions. For VOA News, I am Ornette Walter Solomon in Juba.
The United Nations Secretary General is warning of erosion of human rights globally. Lisa Schlein reports.
UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres says he has met many victims of rape and brutal sexual violence in war zones from the Democratic Republic of Congo to the former Yugoslavia. Guterres says he has heard firsthand accounts from Rohingya refugees who were gang raped while trying to escape violence in Myanmar. He says the place and circumstance of the abuse may differ, but the pain and trauma remain the same.
Let me be clear. Sexual and gender-based violence in conflict is not only a horrendous and life-changing crime, most often perpetrated against women and girls. It is also used as a tactic of war to terrorize families, dehumanize communities, and destabilize societies so that they struggle to recover for years or even decades after the guns fall silent.
Guterres says sexual and gender-based violence in conflict is now widely recognized as a war crime that is preventable and punishable. Julienne Lussange is a Congolese human rights activist. She's president of the group SOFPADI and the director of the Congolese Women's Fund. For her, the suffering endured by women and young girls who have been violated by men at war is an everyday personal matter. She speaks through an interpreter.
During this month of February, our medical center, Karibuni Wamama in Bunia, received in 1 week 28 children who were victims of serious sexual offences, including a baby of 2 years. We continue to see women who have been captives held by various different armed groups in our regional offices.
Not only are these women used as sex slaves, but she says they also are victims of forced marriages, forced labor, physical and psychological violence, and inhuman and degrading treatment. Lussange says her organization provides survivors of these atrocities medical, psychological, and legal support. She says in the past 20 years, her group has been organizing socioeconomic rehabilitation for victims. She says the communities as a whole, traditional leaders, young people, and survivors themselves are involved in this struggle. She speaks through an interpreter.
Women come to us as victims, but they go home as agents of change. Once they have been instructed on their rights and on the laws which punish sexual violence, they join the fight at our side.
The president of the International Committee of the Red Cross, Peter Mora, says sexual violence too often is accepted as an inevitable byproduct of war. He says this must end. He says the law is clear that rape and other forms of sexual violence are a violation, and those guilty of these crimes must be held accountable and punished. Mora says the ICRC will do more on behalf of victims.
Today, the International Committee of the Red Cross is launching an appeal of $27 million to help us better respond to sexual violence in 14 key countries, including expanded services in Colombia, improved responses in Syria, and new services in Central African Republic. For the first time, we will place dedicated specialists in 6 countries this year to increase the field coordination and response of the ICRC.
Among its many recommendations, the UN and ICRC are urging governments to ensure survivors of sexual and gender-based violence and conflict receive adequate protection. They are calling for measures to protect detainees from sexual abuse. They also say governments must provide training for police and armed forces to prevent these atrocities from occurring. They agree with Julienne Lussange, who says it is time to stop using women's bodies as battlefields. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And that is it for this Tuesday, February 26th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford and reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you a very good day.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty of VOA Africa. I am in Nigeria to cover the general election. Listen to my daily reports when you tune in to our news shows. Africa News Tonight, Daybreak Africa, Nightline Africa, an international edition for the latest from Lagos.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll examine the elections in Nigeria and Senegal. Nigerians are electing a president and a national assembly, and voters in Senegal are deciding who is going to be their next president. An in-depth discussion on the Nigerian and Senegalese elections.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
The Voice of America's flagship global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. We have hundreds of reporters gathering the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 17 UTC and 2230 UTC. We're also available online at voanews.com.
voaafrica.com.
News, features, music from Africa and around the world. You want it? We have it on voaafrica.com.
voaafrica.com.